This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
When it comes to helping the blind find their way through the world, there are several options. And Meghna, we're both fortunate to have our sight, but you know what they are, right?
I do. Actually, I happen to live across the street from a seeing eye dog named Bo, who is phenomenal at his job. So that's one of the ways to help the blind navigate the world. I guess there are also canes and GPS systems.
Right. That's all true. Now, here in Boston, though, researchers are developing another tool to help the blind, and it sounds something like this.
Second floor, south. The common room.
So at first I thought there was a pogo stick, but now I'm wondering if it's something more along the lines of a video game?
Yeah, it is. It's a video game designed to help the blind find their way through a building, and it has huge potential. It's being developed by a neuroscientist named Lotfi Maribet at the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary right here in Boston.
I've always been interested working with blind individuals, and particularly blind children. In particular, I'm very interested in how the brain adapts to the loss of sight. You know, you hear these sort of anecdotal stories that blind individuals have keener sense of hearing or touch as a way to somehow adapt for the loss of sight. And I've always been very interested, is that really true? And if that is true, how can we study that?
So that's Lotfi Maribet, and the way he's studying it is through video gaming. And Meghna, remember back in the 90s, there was a video game which kind of created a sensation. It was called Doom.
Absolutely. Hugely popular. One of the first video games that really helped you move through what looked like a three-dimensional space, demons, guns,
exactly.
Blood, victory, the whole thing.
Shooting them down, and that's right. So a researcher down in Chile designed a version of Doom that blind kids could play, and Maribet said the results were really interesting.
If you ask these children to play these games, they play for hours and hours. They're just as addicted as they are with the actual Doom game. And if you give them a sort of a target map where they have to navigate through various doors and so on, and then you give them Lego pieces where each piece means something, for example, a door or munitions or a monster or what have you, the child can actually build a perfect one-to-one representation of that world they navigated through, even though they've never seen the game, they've never seen the world. In fact, they've never seen, period, because these children are born blind.
So, Meghna, they come away with an accurate map in their mind's eye, which I find amazing.
That's incredible.
It is, isn't it? Now, it gets better. Maribet designs a similar game and gave it a pretty fancy name. It's called Audio-Based Environment Simulator, or ABIS. So ABIS is a game in which a blind player has to navigate through a maze, avoid monsters, and collect jewels, and then find his way out.
Okay, but Anthony, just wait a second here, because Maribet, if I understand what you're saying correctly, has designed a video game. But how does a blind person play a video game?
Good question. So he showed me how it works. He sits me down in front of a video screen. I'm not blind, as you know. So I can actually see the maze and the icon. But with headphones, I could hear the way a blind person actually plays the game.
So you'll notice two things. As you step forward, you'll hear a step. All right? As I enter a room, for example, you'll hear the information of where you are.
North, east. The corridor.
For example, you should have heard the corridor, for example. Here, you're going to walk by a door, and you should hear a knocking sound in your left ear, suggesting that the door is actually on the left side, right?
Now I heard the knocking.
There you go. Great. If I turn around, that same knocking should now be in your right ear.
My right ear, which
perfect.
I'm hearing.
Perfect, exactly. Right. So that's an example of how we use an ear con for spatialized sound. Let me take you to another part of the building now. And what you notice now is you should hear knocking and the jiggle.
Yeah.
That tells you that you're actually in front of a door and you can open it.
I see.
Which is what I'm going to do now.
Stairwell 1.
You should also hear, for example, now this alert that you're near a jewel.
There is a jewel in this room.
So that's the jewel.
That's the jewel. That means that you're actually near a jewel.
I see.
Right? And notice as I get closer to the jewel, the jewel sound should
east.
Be actually louder.
North.
Yeah, yeah. So that allows you to orient yourself to where that actual jewel is located.
You pick one jewel.
Here they found the jewel.
And that's what happens when you get a jewel.
You leave one jewel outside the building. Now go inside and find more.
There you go. That's what happens when you get a jewel. Your job now is to
take it
outside.
A little rock and roll applause there.
Exactly. And you notice here, as you walk up the stairs, the pitch of the stairs is actually increasing.
I see. So, that, so the higher
east.
You get, the higher the pitch.
That's right. Now I'm walking down the stairs.
I see.
So you use that to orient yourself in the building.
South.
And again, you're getting this combination of spatialized sounds.
The common room.
Sounds identifying the room that you're in.
There is a monster in front of you.
using very, very simple sounds, very simple rules, if you will, that's what forces the individual to actually learn the spatial layout. And again, at no time do we ever say this is, you know, be careful what the rooms are and what they're called because we're going to test you later. We just tell you this is a game.
So, Anthony, I love how there's jewels and the rock and roll sound for when people actually find what they're looking for. But he said he was going to test the blind players later. So what did he find?
Yeah, so this is where the research gets really interesting. So Marabet tested two groups of blind people. One group got what he called directed navigation. That is, an instructor basically teaches them the layout of the maze in a conventional way. The instructor says it has so many rooms, there's a corridor, you walk this way, you hit a wall, turn around, the exit's behind you. The second group is just allowed to play the game on their own, no directed navigation, no instruction. And then they're tested, and guess which group learns the layout better?
I'm going to guess the video gamers.
Bingo. And here's how Lotfi Marabet explains it.
So this is what we think is actually going on, is that you can build this map either way, but building the map in your mind as a gamer is more robust. And this allows you to problem solve in a way that you can't learn in sort of that standard rote serial supervised learning. I think we've made this argument in education as well. It's one thing to teach you your multiplication tables, for example. It's another thing to teach you the premise behind multiplication, and just no matter what problem you're given, you can solve it. And this is sort of the same sort of rationale.
So amazing, right?
It's totally incredible. I mean, I feel like this may have huge potential because I guess you could create a game that has a map of just about any kind of space you want.
Exactly. So there's someone else I want you to meet. This is Joseph Quintanilla. He's 35 years old from Cambridge. He works now for the National Braille Press.
I've been blind since birth, have retinitis pigmentosa. It's a degenerative eye condition.
So Joe Quintanilla took part in Marabet's research at the Carroll Center for the Blind in Newton. And basically, they set up the video game Abyss in such a way that it reflected the layout of one of the buildings in the Carroll Center, and then asked Joe to play.
For me, I start to visualize what I'm hearing. So that if I hear a knock on the right, three steps later, I know that there are two offices on the right. Mm-hmm. And if I go in those offices, I know which office I was in. So it starts to create a map in my mind. Whether I visualize it exactly the way it looks like or not, I don't know, but I do visualize. And so it is starting to create a map in my head of what I'm hearing.
And Meghna, after Joseph played the game for a while, he developed that visual map in his brain, and he was able to go in to the actual building and find his way around it without ever being told anything about it.
Yeah, I knew parts of the building because I used to work here. But this game actually helped me really get to know it because I'd only been to parts of the building where I had a meeting, which was either the meeting room or a couple of the offices. I didn't realize some of the classrooms that actually existed. So trying to find things, it gave me the incentive to look around places that I actually had never walked into in this building.
So, Anthony, I actually have a question.
Yeah.
Do they know what's actually happening in the brain while someone like Joseph is playing the game? Is he using parts of the brain that were once dedicated to actual, like, visual input?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I asked Marabet this very question. And he actually explored this using brain scans. And this is another part of what's fascinating about his research.
What we find here is, I'm showing you, this is activation in the brain of a sighted individual who's blindfolded, who's playing the game, and you see activation in their visual brain because they're mentally imagining the world. If you ask a congenitally blind individual or early blind individual to do the same thing, we find exactly the same pattern. The same parts of the brain are active, and in particular, the visual part of the brain.
Fascinating. Huh.
Even though they've never seen. They're using the same parts of their brain that a sighted person would use.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Totally amazing.
Yeah.
It seems like this research has unlimited potential.
Yeah, think about it. I mean, if the video game was able to help Joe Quintanilla find his way around the Carroll Center, think what it might do on a much bigger scale. And here, one more time, is Lotfi Marabet.
A lot of the participants in the study, that's exactly what they ask us. You know, could you map my home? Could you map my school? Could you map the mall? You know, that sort of thing. And I think the idea is that if we demonstrate this proof of principle, just how robust it is, how quickly they can learn, and the advantage of doing it by gaming, I think we will have that evidence of moving further and creating a platform technology that could take something, for example, Google Maps, and then render it into this auditory space that an individual could use to navigate other buildings and things like that in the city.
It's so fascinating because it's this idea that this can be happening while they play a game. Just astounding to me.
Yeah, I think that's what neuroscience was always appealing about for myself, is that it always seems to solve things. It always adapts. You just have to give it information in a way that it can handle and the way that it likes to handle. Gaming just seems to be one thing that the brain really, really likes to do.
So that's Lotfi Maribet. He's a neuroscientist at the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary here in Boston, and there's more information about his research on our website, radioboston.org.
Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow on the show, two students have been found dead in their dorm rooms at MIT this semester, prompting questions about why there's been a troubling rise in the number of college students with mental health issues. So we'll take a look at how colleges across the region have expanded mental health and outreach services and whether it's enough. That's tomorrow on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.